Welcome, welcome, gentlemen, to what is absolutely positively a long overdue episode number 51 of the Chick Whisperer podcast. Before we get rolling with a cool and very interesting guest that I've got for you today, who's going to talk to you all about how to enrich your social circles like never before, I want to let you know about a special report that I just put together for you that's going to really, really focus on helping you guys out there who've been struggling with online dating. Now, I know a lot of you guys, if you haven't tried online dating already, it's probably because you've heard so many horror stories about guys getting on there and just crashing and burning, not meeting any of the kind of women they really want to meet, if they meet any at all. Well, let me tell you something. I met my lovely wife online. You can meet great women online. I've got guys all over the country who are meeting women who've been on television, their local weather girls, former Olympic gymnasts. There are some sharp, sharp women online, and it's time for you to meet the ones who are at the very top of your list of hotties, at the very top of your favorite list, on sites like Match.com and Plenty of Fish. My special report is called 6 Keys to Meeting an Amazing Woman Online, and you can get it at www.onlinedatingdomination.com. That's onlinedatingdomination.com. When you get there, go ahead and sign up for my newsletter, which is always packed with groundbreaking dating and seduction information that you can start using today. And go ahead and take a look at my minty fresh new version of Online Dating Domination version 2.0 while you're at it. And now, let's get a move on straight to episode number 51 of the Chick Whisperer podcast. Enjoy.
You're listening to the world famous Chick Whisperer podcast. And now, here's your host, Scott McKay.
All right, it's podcast time again. In this case, that means it's episode number 51 of the world famous Chick Whisperer show. Good to be back in the saddle talking to you guys again. Got a super cool guest for you today. Guy I've gotten to know over the past few months. He's got a pretty unique specialty because what he does is he trains you guys how to really kick ass socially. This is going to be all about supercharging your social circles. With me today, all the way from London, England, one of my favorite cities to visit, Greg Greenway from Social Circle Training. How's it going, Greg?
I'm great, Scott, man. It's good to be here. Good to be talking to you, mate.
Yeah, you and I always have really interesting conversations when we're on the phone together.
Yeah, I like that.
Oh, yeah, man. Absolutely. You're a very interesting guy in general. Probably the first thing I should let these guys in on is that in addition to having a great book on how to get into the lives of nines and tens, women who are the highest echelon hottest women on earth, literally, you have an incredible full-scale training program called Social Supremacy Blueprint that guys have just been raving about. That's what guys know you for. But behind the scenes, you also help companies give prizes, really special, amazing prizes to people who they're high performers. And we're talking about things like jet fighter flights, tickets to the Oscars, chances to meet celebrities and be behind the scenes on movie sets and stuff like that. You are a guy who walks his talk as much as anybody else I know anywhere, really. I mean, you claim to be able to help guys get access to real high-end social circles, like literally hanging out with rock stars here, but you do it yourself. And you've gotten to do it really quickly. I mean, you're a guy who basically moved to Los Angeles with just a few dollars to his name and had all kinds of crazy stuff happen, right?
Yeah, man, that was definitely, it's cool because a lot of that stuff goes hand in hand. It allows me, especially being able to access the social circles, learning the stuff and continuously practicing allows me to, you know, apply it in my business as well. But yeah, I landed in Los Angeles a couple of years ago and I didn't have anything. You know, I just had a couple of, a few hundred dollars, a couple of phone numbers, and using the social circle techniques that I had been learning and studying and practicing over the last few years, I was able to, you know, have some really, really crazy experiences happening. Everything from being invited to the Playboy Mansion for lunch. You can pay to go to the Playboy Mansion, but I actually got invited as a special guest to come on their Sunday lunch. I had the governor of California buy me whiskey out of his own personal $2,000 bottle, and I had another guy take me and a few girls out to Tahiti on a private jet, which I didn't pay for. And it sounds like stuff that would be a bit out there, but generally speaking, it's all based on a specific set of patterns and rules that every social relationship, every friendship, every business partnership is based upon. And once you know those specific rules, you can kind of exploit it in pretty much any social setting that you want and any outcome you want, whether it is at the very top end, you know, hang out with celebrities, rock stars, or even on a more personal level, just have a better social life, just have better friends. It's all the exact same thing, because all social circles, all social groups, all social networks follow the exact same patterns. So once you know those patterns, you can go out and apply it and use it for any situation that you really want to.
Yeah, it's going to be a really fascinating discussion. We're going to jump right into talking about all of that. But first, we're going to hit a very interesting voicemail that we got from Jake. And we don't know where he's from, so we'll just say he's from college. Jake from college. And here's what he had to say.
Hey, Scott, what's going on? This is Jake. Throughout college, I was dating this girl probably like 4 years on and off, and we got most serious the last year. And she told me that I was the only other guy that she had sex with besides her boyfriend in high school. And then I found out like a week ago that that wasn't true. And actually, her number is about 10. And I've spent this whole time thinking that she had not had sex with anybody else. And that ended up, I guess, being based on a lie, but I guess, like, it's to be expected. It was just weird that it was such a lie. Then I found out that 5 of the guys were guys in school while during the period of time that we were dating on and off. So, I mean, I guess I can't really hold that against her. But this summer, I went to London, and we decided we would remain monogamous. But she claimed that she didn't know I was ever coming back, and I found out when I got back here that she had had sex with her ex-boyfriend twice. Then once I came back, things are pretty good with us right now, and they're better than they've been before. But it's just hard for me to believe her that it was only that one guy. And she says she'll stop talking to him. And I just want to know if you think it's enough of deserving what I want to forgive her for that and get past it, or if that's enough that I should feel lied to and I should break it off with her.
Well, now, there's several things going on in this particular message from Jake. We got lots of answers for you. And Greg, I'm going to go ahead and let you get started riffing on this one.
Well, one of the first things that I noticed about that he was talking about, and I know a lot of guys tend to have this issue and come up with it as well, is the whole women lying about their numbers thing. And I don't know, obviously, I'd love to get your opinion as well, because I feel like maybe I have quite a liberal view of it, but I think guys get a little bit too hung up on the whole numbers thing, especially if it's before you, because, you know, let's be honest, we're in the 21st century now, you know, there's not going to be many women that you're ever going to meet who don't have a past. And generally, that doesn't really reflect on anything to do with her. It doesn't really reflect on her past. It's just, you know, it's just something that happens before your time. And it seemed like Jake was a little bit hung up on, you know, what had happened before he'd met her. Now, I don't really know if he should be worrying about that, because that's not something that he can control. He should only really think about how, you know, his relationship with her pans out. So that was like the first thing I noticed about what he said.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I think the whole idea of women lying about the number of sex partners they've had is purely out of social self-defense. And I mean, you're the social circle guy. So I think, you know, you can't really expect a woman who's had sexual partners to just blatantly admit the exact number of sexual partners that she's had to every single guy she meets. And especially, Jake, if you've kind of hinted to her either objectively or subjectively that it's going to bother you to think about her having sex with someone else, that's when women really do jump into their shell, close the lid, and just don't let you know anything about it. And yes, when you find out later, that's when ye old Madonna whore complex kicks into high gear, and all of a sudden you start looking at your girlfriend a bit differently, perhaps like she's a little sluttier or more experienced. And you know, guys, we do this to ourselves, okay? If we're going to judge women for their sexual past, which a lot of women are going to have, then, you know, You're going to get a surprise here and there, and there's going to be guilt and shame felt by the woman, and that's not going to be any good for your relationship. And then you're going to be there kind of hit with this ton of bricks, and all of a sudden you have to deal with it. Now, that aside, you were on again, off again in this relationship. I'm assuming is probably a better way to put it, Jake, that when she slept with these other guys at your college, it was during the off again phase. But I don't know if you can know that for sure. All I know is she's sleeping with other guys and getting back together with you and deciding that you shouldn't know about it. If it's in the off again phase of the relationship, guess what? That's her prerogative. Yeah. If you're not dating each other and you do not have a relationship, then she could do whatever she wants and you can't judge her for it. Now, some guys, I'm not saying this is you, Jake, but for the sake of guys who are listening to this show, some guys are more jealous of a woman's sexual history than they are really mad or hurt or judgmental about it. It's like, wait a minute, you had 10 sexual partners? Well, if I marry you and I haven't slept with any other women yet, then I'm not going to get a chance to catch up with you. You're always going to have that on me. You're going to be 9 up on me, literally. I think that's usually what's going on in guys' heads. It's an ego thing. So look, Jake, what were you doing during the off again phase? Were you waiting around for the relationship to get back together, or were you being proactive? Were you going out and dating other women? Now, I'm not as much about measuring the quantity of relationships, sexual or otherwise, as I am the quality of them. I really don't give a rat's hind parts how many women you've slept with or not slept with. And guess what? She probably doesn't either. For her, she's desperately trying to cling to the hope you'll never find out about these guys she slept with because, you know, you're judgmental towards her. That's the problem going on here. So listen, man, she may have slept with some other guys while not with you. That's not a problem. If she did that while she was with you, that's a problem. And guess what? Before we get to the last part of this, which I'm going to want your opinion on also, Greg, I just want to throw something out there. I don't even believe in on-again, off-again relationships. I think if you break up, there's a good reason for it almost all the time. So if you're on-again, off-again, on-again, off-again, you're just proving to each other again and again that you should break up and stay broken up. You're not compatible. You're not looking out for each other's best interests. You're not even thinking long-term with each other. You're taking a piecemeal approach to this relationship, which probably, if not definitely, indicates that you're settling. You know, there's no one better coming along. You're going to go back to what's convenient, which is your ex-girlfriend. Now, that brings us to the final part, this whole idea about London. Look, her saying to you, I didn't know whether you were ever going to come back from London or not, that's ridiculous, dude. Okay, so if she is going back to another ex-boyfriend, that means she's got a pattern involved here with the whole on-again, off-again thing. She's returning to guys who are convenient right and left. You're one of them now. I mean, I think she's just kind of shoehorning different guys into her life as is convenient. This is very, very common amongst young women, you guys out there who'd like to date younger women, because they're living for the moment. They're not thinking long-term. They're not thinking, hey, this guy's going to see me as a cheater, and he's not going to want to marry me someday if I behave like this now. She's in college. That's the way she's looking at the world. What do you think, Greg?
You know what? Yeah, I completely agree with you. I mean, there was one thing that I wanted to mention that you were talking about, which as you were saying it, I was kind of almost in two minds. And it was definitely the bit about on and off again relationships. Because, especially because with what I do, I get a lot of guys who tend to come to me because they've hit a kind of level of mediocrity and they've got like a lot of boredom in their life and they haven't got the social life they want and they want to, you know, exchange that. And one of the things that I see a lot of these guys, especially guys who are really bored, is that they tend to have a lot of these on and off again relationships. And when I talk to them and when I really delve deep and you ask them about, you know, to really explain and describe those relationships, it tends to be, well, I've seen it has been a pattern, and they will take the on and off again relationship because the highs are so much better than the boringness that they have without that person that they will happily take the lows because for them it's like, it's just that little bit of, you know, okay, this is something. I'm getting to at least feel something here as opposed to just kind of be socially flatlined, should I say, for the entire time. So I don't know, I kind of, when you were saying that, I was kind of like, well, there is that kind of those guys who, it's not so much the fact that they're not incompatible or they can't find anything better. It's, I feel like some of the guys are just, you know, this is, I'll at least take how bad it is And when I'm come to my senses, I won't be in that situation. But when I start to miss it because everything else is boring, you know, this kind of puts me in a good stead. So when you were saying that, it kind of just reminded me of a couple of guys who, you know, I've spoken to who've had that sort of, hey, you know, this is at least something for me. And this is, you know, I don't get to have anything that makes me feel alive or anything that makes me, you know, feel happy. Whereas this girl does that, even if she is acting a bit crazy every now and again.
Well, I think that's actually in synchronicity with what I was saying, because it's really coming down to not having any options or not perceiving oneself to have any other options. You know, whether you're feeling like this woman is the best I can get, or I don't have anybody else to go to, or, you know, it's a matter of convenience. All of it points to the same core issue, which is you're not improving your social circle. You're not bringing more women into your life. You're not increasing the number of people you know. Now, if you're at a tiny school, okay, or if you're in a town of 140 people like this one woman I used to coach, maybe you have dated everybody and gotten to know everybody. Well, that's a problem that can be resolved by moving to a place with more people in it. But at a university or any decent-sized college, like I'm assuming Jake's coming from here, you should go out and meet more women, period.
Yeah, I agree with that, definitely. I mean, the London thing is, I mean, that should have been his indication there. That was pretty obvious indicator that she's not taking what he's saying that seriously.
Well, you know, you were talking about before kind of being on the fence about part of this and how to answer the question and maybe the answer that I gave to it. Here's what I'm on the fence about. Maybe you can be the decision maker here. Look, I fully get that when you're in college, you've got 4 years to pretty much make hay while the sun shines. So if someone you're allegedly dating exclusively leaves you for an entire summer, it's really, really hard to expect that the other party in the relationship is just going to stick around and remain monogamous and not go out with anybody else. If you say you're going to do that, you should, because that's a matter of character. But these two don't communicate. Jake, you and your girl don't communicate with each other at a level of honesty that portends a good, solid, long-term relationship. You know, she's telling you things because she thinks that's what you want to hear, and she thinks that's the way you're leading the relationship, that she has no intention of following through on. In other words, yeah, okay, sure, I'll wait for you while you go to London. So, I mean, she's probably sitting there saying, oh, great, now I've just told my boyfriend I'm going to stick around and wait for him and have boring summer while he goes to London and does God knows what with whom, right? Well, when she does decide to get back with her ex-boyfriend or whoever is convenient, because we see the pattern here, right? In this case, it was an ex-boyfriend. She's going to go ahead and give in to that because she lacks the character, but then she's going to have to come up with some excuse, and the best she could reach for is, I didn't know if you were ever going to come back. Look, man, this isn't a suicide mission. It was a trip to the UK, for gosh sakes. That's a lame excuse, and to me that says that she doesn't have a very high character. But like I said, I'm on the fence about this because young women who are in college tend to live in the moment. I'm not going to excuse her actions, but I think it's unreasonable for a guy who's dating a woman to expect her to act like a nun while he leaves for the entire summer. I'm a little bit on the fence about it. I think it was unreasonable to expect that she would be like that, but I do think she should be held accountable for her actions if she said she was going to remain faithful and didn't. And I think that does say something about the potential or lack thereof of a good, solid, long-term relationship that's going to continue well long into the future. What do you think?
Sure. I mean, if they specifically had the conversation that said, I'm going away to London, I'm going to stay monogamous to you, you're going to stay monogamous to me, then, you know, he's well and within his rights, even as unreasonable as it seems, because I think that's very unreasonable to expect, you know, a young girl, young guy to be away, college, 20 to 21, that kind of age, to be away for the whole summer. That's a big ask. But then if they agreed that that was what the case was going to be, then, you know, and she goes against that, that's in itself, like you say, shows poor character. And that's indication of what's going to happen in the future. But if they didn't have the conversation, then yeah, he's really not got a leg to stand on to realistically expect someone to be able to do that, because it's just not realistic. Like for a young girl, young guy, it's very, very optimistic to expect that's going to happen. I mean, even if you had the conversation, that still would take a very strong girl to do that. But without that conversation, yeah, he's just praying there.
Yeah. I think it's an unreasonable pact to make with each other, especially if it's been on again, off again in the past, you know,
that too.
Into the works also. But yeah, I mean, if you're going to make that pact and agree to it, you're on the hook for it. Mm-hmm. Bottom line here, Jake, is I think you'll be a lot happier in your relationships with women if you judge them sexually a lot less than you do now. Start thinking of women as having the same sexual freedom to express themselves as you do. They're not comparing you to other guys in the sack. I'll be honest with you. Emily and I do not know each other's number. Now, it could be that we met in our late 30s together, and, you know, by then we both have a couple kids. We're obviously not virgins. It is irrelevant to our relationship. I know Emily's got a strong character. I know she hasn't been banging the entire football team in her past. She knows I haven't been whoring around either. But I mean, sex happens. You know, you can put that in capital letters and make a bumper sticker out of it. So, you know, by the time you get to be your mid-30s, you've had some sex partners. Even if you're trying not to have a whole lot of sex and you don't believe in sex before marriage or whatever, I mean, divorce has a way of tearing your heart out and giving you some moral pause. And everybody has gone through some crap by the time they're in their 30s. And I'll tell you what, the only difference between those people and people your age, Jake, is you haven't lived as long as they have yet. I'm telling you, women will have experience sexually that they're not going to want to tell guys like you about because they fear the judgment from you. It doesn't make them bad people. If you were able to be honest about sexual partnerships with women and not have a judgmental attitude for it, not only would you not care about their number, I'd be willing to bet you the number might not ever even come up. I'm curious as to how you ever found out the real number. You didn't mention that. I mean, all it's doing is causing you pain. As far as her sleeping with other guys at college, if the relationship is over, then it's over and she's doing what she's going to do. Now, if it's over and she senses she's going to get back together with you and she's using this as an excuse to get some nookie with some other guys before you inevitably get back together because you just had like a little argument or something that lasted a couple days, that's a little different. That's a gray area. But ultimately, I don't think this woman is presenting herself as long-term relationship material with you. I don't even think she's so into a long-term relationship with you because she certainly doesn't act like it. Guys, if you would like to have your voicemail answered on this show, here's the number you want to call. Area code 210-362-4400. That's 210-362-4400. Now, when you call that, like I've always told you, no one's going to answer the phone. You'll get instructions on how to leave a nice voicemail that is relevant to a large number of guys who are listening. Leave us your name and where you're from, which, Jake, you didn't, so we're just saying you're from college. And then please spell out your email address, because what we do when you have your voicemail played on this particular podcast is we give you a prize. And today we're going to have a very special prize for you, Jake. And it's going to come from my main man, Greg Greenway here. And it's called Access Nines and Tens. And that's going to be yours. Greg, what's he going to get in that program?
So the Access Nines and Tens program is a step-by-step on how to be in the social circles which have the most attractive women. Supermodels, celebrities, the socialites, the girls who are exceptionally beautiful, nines and tens, they're rare, but they're united in their rarity in certain types of social circle. So the program first teaches you how to exactly get into those type of social circles so that you can be around and you can date and seduce women that are A, better looking, and B, more qualified to you. Whether it's personality or a certain type of interest it is, it's about being in the social circles with the most qualified woman for you, looks-wise and personality-wise.
Yeah, I mean, that's unique, powerful stuff. Nobody else is teaching exactly what Greg's teaching the way he's teaching it, so enjoy that, Jake. That's going to be coming at you at no charge at all as a cool prize from my man Greg, because your voicemail was selected to be played here on the Chick Whisper Show. And we trust we gave you an answer that's going to help you. It may not have been the easiest answer to hear. In fact, there was a little bit of tough love there for sure, but I trust that it was useful to you. And now, Greg, man, let's jump into this whole social circle thing. First of all, how are you defining the term social circle?
A social circle is a group of interconnected people connected by norms, values, and it usually has a set of rules that defines the behavior of each of the individuals in the group.
So all of us in life, pretty much, unless we're Ted Kaczynski and a hermit living out in the Montana wilderness, we have people we know who we're social with, and those people comprise our social circle. But we may have different social circles made up of different people that we run with, right?
That's right, yeah. I mean, you've got larger social networks. If I explain a concept I call your social pyramid, maybe that might help explain this properly. So you've got six, you know, you've heard that saying, there's 6 degrees of separation.
Right.
Okay, so when I was kind of exploring this, I started to look at how you could relate to any single person in the world in just 6 steps. And so that's when I came up with something called your social pyramid. So if you think of a pyramid, at the very top, you've got yourself. Then you've got your social circle, which is your inner circle and your out circle. Then you've got your connected social network, which is the next level. And so those are people who are connected by one or more specific type of common interest. So that could be in the people that you go, that you know, that you meet at your gym, or the people that you meet at your church. They wouldn't necessarily be part of your social circle, but they're part of your connected social network. Then you go to the people who are in your unconnected social network. So those are the people that live in your area. Your paths may cross, but you've got nothing socially that connects you together other than the fact of some proximity. Outside that, you've got society and then humanity as a whole. So when you split that up into those categories, inner circle, outer circle, connected network, unconnected network, society and humanity, then you can see how you can fit each individual person that you could ever possibly meet into specific categories of how close they are to you.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good, solid way to describe it. Now, for the purpose of guys who are listening, I think the first things we're thinking to ourselves and considering as you're talking about what social circles are, is, are we pleased with the people we're running with? Would we like to be able to run with certain people we're not running with now? The answer to the first question may be yes, but I think there's always someone we'd like to know who we don't know. And you're famous for being able to help people access really high-end social circles, the most beautiful women in the world, rock stars, LA socialites, London socialites. Maybe we don't have our sights set high enough in terms of the people we expect to run with. I mean, is that something maybe that you're seeing, or, you know, is it completely cool if we just maybe want to have the people who are the cool people at work invite us to happy hour sometime? I mean, is that enough, or should we all set the bar a little higher?
I mean, I think everybody's different. I don't think that, because you do definitely get a specific group of guys who are, you know, they want to be part of the highest end social circles. And it depends on what your life goal is, because those high-end social circles fit a specific utility, which is why they are the way they are. They fit a specific need of certain people. But like I said right at the very start, all social circles have the same processes behind them, and they have the same systems and patterns. So even if you just want to be part of the social circle, so you get an invite to have drinks after work, or so you're involved in the water cooler conversations at work, that in itself is a social circle. And the rules that allow you to get into that social circle are the exact same rules that allow you to get into the high-end social circle. So what generally happens is that even when guys start out with rather less lofty ambitions, they say, okay, I just want to be part of the social circle at work. Once they've done that, once they've seen, oh, wow, this works, then they start thinking, okay, thinking outside the box. You know, okay, I want a new job. Can I get a social circle that's going to, you know, put me in a better professional position? All right, I want to, some of my friends don't really have the same zest for life that I do. They don't really have the same ambitions as I do. Can I be in a social circle that does that? And it's all the same thing. And it comes down to, you need to get people to do two things. Firstly, you need, on the very, very basic level, you need to get into a stage of one-on-one rapport with people. And that's a stage of rapport where an individual will spend time with you on a one-on-one basis. That's the very, very first stage. The next stage, if you're trying to get access into the higher end social circles or social circles where you generally don't have any reason to be part of that social circle because, you know, you may be in a new city or you don't know anyone there, you need to get to a stage of what I call introductory rapport, which is where the individuals will actively introduce you into their life, into their social circle. If you imagine that you've got friends that you'd spend time with on a one-on-one basis, and then you've got friends that you would spend time with, but then you wouldn't introduce them to, I don't know, your college friends, your family, or maybe some of your work friends. That discrepancy is all based on different levels of the rapport ladder. So the trick for guys to do is, the very first thing is they need to get to one-on-one rapport, and that's a level where they can spend time with somebody on a one-on-one basis. And to do that, you need to build up human rapport, and you need to use things called rapport accelerators, which can do it really fast. Those are familiarity, commonality, and similarities, being a zapper and not being a sapper, recognition, and reciprocity. So those are the things that guys can do. Do you want me to go for a couple of those?
Absolutely, man.
Cool.
Sounds like you know your stuff, man. You can just rattle this stuff off in your sleep, can't you?
Yeah. I mean, it's as long as you keep practicing it, it will become very, very, very second nature. The reason what Rapport Accelerators came about is that when I first landed in LA, because I didn't know anyone, and because I was in a situation where I had to really do this quite fast, all the books you will read, most of the stuff you read about, you know, building rapport with people, kind of teach you a very drip-drip style that can take quite a very long time to happen. And everything that I wanted to do, I wanted to be able to do it as quickly as possible. So I wanted to be able to create rapport or get into a stage with someone, become friends with somebody as quickly as possible. And I found that there were certain things that sped up rapport. These were the things that are called rapport accelerators. So I'm just going to, you know, go through a couple of the most important ones. Recognition is probably my favorite one, because after speaking to the different students I've had, I've practiced it as well, it tends to be the one that is the most powerful. And I guess maybe it ties into the fact that we're generally a selfish species, and we know we're really quite self-centered. But recognition is the process by when you meet someone, you remember something that is specifically unique and personal to them, and then you recall that every time you see them. And it doesn't even have to be their name. It can just be anything specific. And I learned this from one of my old school teachers, because he would go into a room or an environment and he'd spend like 2-3 seconds interactions, like really, really short interactions with everybody. And as he left, they were smiling like as if they just won the lottery. And I remember seeing him do this, like, okay, Mr. Houston was his name. And I stopped him. I said, listen, no, can you teach me what it is you're doing? Because it's brilliant. You walk around the room, you have 5-10 second interactions with everybody and they're really smiling. And he said, you know, the trick is you don't even have to remember the person's name. Just remember something really specific and personal to them and recall that back. Once I started practicing this, this literally would shoot rapport up with people like through the roof. And I didn't even necessarily have to remember their name. The way that you would find stuff to remember, because, you know, after I teach the recognition tactic, the very first thing, the very next thing someone's going to ask is, okay, well, how do I find that information that I can remember about someone? And I find that there's a few conversations, there's a few topics that give you the most information. People will give you all the information you need about them. You know, if you let someone talk a lot for long enough, they will give you all the information you need. And the socially intelligent people are the people that get better at being able to pick this information out quickly. So questions that ask people about where do they come from? What were they like as a kid? Who are their friends? What's their family like? Why they are here? I mean, if you think that a lot of your listeners are going to be in cosmopolitan cities, so the Chicago's, New York's, Los Angeles, London's of the world, all these cities have a lot of people who aren't native to that city. So any one of those questions or statements, conversations, how did you end up here? Where are you from? What's your home life like? As in, what's your family like? What are your friends like? I bet you were a bit of a troublemaker at school. Anything like that. Any one of those conversations encourage the person you're talking to just riff off so much valuable information that you can use as something, as a piece of recognition. Because the thing that you want to look out for is, what are they most passionate about? When they talk about something, what's this thing that they're being really animated about? And that's the thing that, you know, is going to give you the recognition fuel. Because at that point, if you just latch onto that thing, and it's not difficult, you don't have to remember, you know, tens of thousands of information, because I think what people try and do sometimes, they try and remember too much. You only need one piece of information. And by asking those questions, that gives you the food that you need. So that's recognition, and that's, I think, the most important rapport accelerator. The second most important accelerator, and this is one that, you know, everybody can start doing straight away, and it's familiarity, and it's sometimes called the mere exposure effect. And it's the concept by the more someone sees something, the more they like it. And they've done tens of thousands of studies on this, and it's why the advertising industry is like a multi-billion dollar worldwide industry. And it's based on every time somebody sees something, and as long as there's a positive experience with that, or at least a neutral experience, the more they see it, the more they like it. The way that you can create this effect in your everyday life is by creating a routine. So when guys are starting out their social, trying to build their social circle, or they're in a city for the very first time, what I encourage them to do is get it into a routine. Go to the same coffee shop, go to the same hotel, go to the same nightclub, go to the same supermarket, and go at the same times. Because what that will do is that if you're creating your routine, especially around the environment that's likely to have the most type of people that you want to be in social circles with, then just by the very nature of what you're doing and you being out there and you using that familiarity and that mere exposure effect, very, very quickly, it's going to be inevitable that you're going to get into conversations and you're going to build up relations and you're going to build up rapport with the people that are there. So using those two, combining just those two, familiarity and recognition, that's going to get you from a stage of what normally takes, you know, weeks or months to build a friendship with someone, to having a pretty solid relationship and pretty solid bonds with people in a matter of maybe days or a few meetings. I mean, I've been able to pull this off in like literally a couple of days, in a few days. I've known guys been able to pull it off as well in weeks, and it just speeds up that entire process of going from a stranger to someone who's got one-on-one rapport with you.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds to me like you're talking about this whole idea of being interesting and interested, but you've built a formula around it. Yeah, man, you totally know your stuff. A couple things I'd like to ask you about here.
Sure.
A lot of times guys come to me and they ask me questions like, okay, so if I'm in New York City and there's this stunning supermodel walking down the sidewalk on the other side of the street during rush hour, how do I stop her and get her phone number? And the guy asking me this question wouldn't know what to do to create attraction or to start a conversation with the waitress at Denny's who approaches him first to ask for his breakfast order. It seems like our programming as guys is to reach for the most difficult, complex, and perhaps sexiest situation we could think of and try to figure that out first. I mean, we even do it in sports. I mean, when guys start to learn how to play basketball, they want to do a behind-the-back pass before they even learn the fundamental rules of the game. Or when we as guys first pick up a guitar and want to learn how to play it, we're trying to play Stairway to Heaven or something instead of learning basic chords. What I hear you telling me is, yes, I can get into the social circles of the rich and famous the exact same way that I get into the group of cooler people at work.
Yep.
So right on, Greg. These guys can start at the baseline level doing the basic stuff and take the exact same skills and use them next time around to really start hanging with some amazing people.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's funny. You gave that example there about running up to the hot supermodel across the street in New York. And if you're using social circle properly, you can actually get the best outcome you want from doing it in two completely different ways. So the first, more basic way I would say it, and this would completely remove a lot of the issues that guys first come up with, is like you said, when you compare it to sports, guys try and, you know, it's like if you went into the gym, you're not going to try and bench press 200 kilos when you've never done it before. You need to get warmed up. And the beauty of constantly working in the social circle, because the first thing that I teach and the first technique I say is like, guys, get into a habit of talking to people all the time. So the coffee waitress or the ticket attendant or the person that's bagging your groceries who are there and have to talk to you, get into a habit of talking to them. Because what that's going to do is that's going to build up your social muscle, because being sociable is a muscle. And if you go out and you try and talk to, you know, the hottest girl you've seen all day and you haven't spoken to everyone all day, your social muscle is not going to be warmed up. And you're going to make mistakes and you're not going to be in your best sociable position. So just by doing that, just by being social, if that situation arises, which invariably it will arise that you see a girl that you want to talk to, then you're already in a very sociable manner. And just talking to her is like the most natural thing to do because you've been talking to people all day long. That's just like a way of dealing with the situation ad hoc. Obviously, my imperative is to get guys to be in this situation proactively. And women who, especially women who are really, really high quality and really good looking, they tend to place a lot of value on their social circle. And they have social circles they're usually quite invested in. So they are going to remove a lot of the obstacles around dating if you're actually based in their social circle. So the guys who are in their social circle and guys who are in their social groups don't have to jump through the same hoops that, you know, a guy that she just met on the street would. Just by using the same techniques you would use to get into, you know, the social circle at work, apply those social circles to the type of women you want to be around. So if you say that it wants it's supermodels, if you say it's women who are into fitness, if you say it's, I don't know, it's women who are very artistic, whatever it is, get into the social circles that has those type of women in abundance. Then once you've done that, you're going to be, like, I mean, you're listening to a lot of the stuff that that Scott's been talking about. You're going to be a guy that's got things going for him. In a situation where you meet a girl on the street for the first time, she's got to make a snap decision about you. She doesn't really know anything about you. In a social circle, you give her the gift of getting to know you because she can now learn about you and your reputation and your personality and everything that's positive about you. She gets to observe that. And she gets to observe that not only by her other people in the social circle responding to you, but how you act around other people, how you deal with other people, all those really positive traits that she will never be able to see when you first meet her, she gets to have those while you're talking to her. And then you get into a stage where you can mess up a lot of the stuff that you would normally have to get right when you meet a girl straight off the bat. But because she has so many good reference points about you, A, you're in her social circle, so you're pre-selected to be like a lot of the other guys she's dated already. If you're in her social circle, then the qualities that you have are likely to be the same qualities that she's going to have. So a lot of points that she would need to have ticked off in her brain, you can just sit back and not have to worry about those. And you can just concentrate on getting to know her. Because the thing that I see a lot of guys spending time trying to do is create and generate attraction. And when they're spending time generating attraction, they're not concentrating on actually connecting with the girl. They're not concentrating on actually creating a genuine connection. I'm not saying that attraction isn't important, but by having a social circle, it solves that job of attraction. Because if you're an attractive person and you manage to get into a social circle, and that's a social circle that she's invested in, then all the attractive qualities of everybody else in her social circle are transferred to you. So at that point, all you need to really concentrate on is how you connect with her, how you build up your levels of comfort with her, how you build up your levels of rapport with her. You get to bypass a lot of the whole mating game really, really quickly just by concentrating on getting into a social circle. And because you can get into a social circle based on your interest, that's a positive and beneficial thing for your own life anyway. So the women, and the fact that the women are, you know, will be some of the most attractive women in the world and some of the most qualified women for you if you're picking a social circle based on women that, you know, the type of women that you really like, that's a bonus. Because A, you're into the social circle to improve your life and have a more, you know, fulfilling social life. But and you've also got the bonus of having the exact type of women you want, whether that's you want to hang around 9s and 10s, celebrity supermodels, or you just want to hang around girls who have the same interests as you. It has that bonus. And, you know, there's a saying, I can't remember who said it, but the best way to get girls is to not try and get girls. And so it's the same thing.
You know, one of the stunning implications of what you're talking about is that in many ways, people are people. We all respond socially in a positive manner to similar things. Even if there's a woman who's beautiful and gorgeous and you're trying to sexually attract her, yeah, you're going to layer that level of sexual polarity on top of it. But it's still the same general strategy to get into that social circle, to build rapport with those people and literally make friends and influence people, as Dale Carnegie once said.
Yeah.
I think that's incredibly fascinating. And it brings up an interesting question that I would love to have you answer before we shut down here.
Sure thing.
Is a byproduct of getting better with women, getting better at making friends with men too, and or vice versa?
Oh yeah, completely. It really does. I mean, okay, if we just go to back to one of the things we talked about today, that was trying to figure out a recognition tool. Just getting into the habit of doing that, whether you're doing that with guys or girls. Okay, let's say you're doing it with just guys. And you're having these conversations where you're being able to try and find out something that you can recognize about them. And you're talking about their past and you're talking about things that, you know, they're passionate about. When you transfer that to talking to women, it's an almost direct correlation, because those are the ways that you get into conversations with women that actually stimulate them and actually, you know, get them to bring out something about themselves, get them to actually be something that isn't just the same mundane conversation that she has normally, like, you know, is this your first time here? Who are you here with? You know, all the boring conversations that women have heard a million times. When you're at it and you're talking to a woman and you're getting into a conversation with her about things that really stimulate her, what her passions are, what her life is like, things that allow her to really talk about and show out her personality, that's something that you will get better at by doing this, but having those conversations with guys as well. And vice versa. I mean, seduction is a kind of like a two-way thing. The same skills that you will learn in seducing a woman in terms of getting someone, because all seduction really is getting someone to have your point of view or convincing someone to do something that you're trying to do. If you're learning that skill and you're trying to seduce women, that can be transferred into business meetings, that can be transferred to getting people's opinions or winning people over to your side. It's all generally the same thing. So just by practicing your conversations and you're being sociable with guys, you're transferring that to getting women to open up more and connecting with women. Or when you're seducing women or when you're trying to get them into a significant relationship, you're then transferring that into a business or professional sense. And there's so many overlaps and it can be used in the same way. The underlying thing is that they're all people, okay? And we're all people, and guys and girls, other than the differences that we have, the things that underline what makes people happy, what makes people passionate, what makes people want to get into a relationship with you, it's generally the same thing. And you can just, you know, use those underlying patterns and either use them to seduce women or, you know, use them to build your rapport with guys. So you can use both scenarios to improve either side of the coin.
Yeah, it seems to me that what's attractive about a certain human being is going to be attractive to men and women. It's just that those who are going to feel sexually attracted to you because of their sexual preference, in this case, we're a pretty heterocentric show, so guys talking about making women attracted to them in the sexual sense, the only difference there is what makes you a man of character, what makes you confident, what I generally call the big four, being masculine in the way women define it, stands out as what makes them horny.
Yeah.
But everything else that makes you a great man is also going to make you a great man in the eyes of other men.
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating, fascinating stuff. It really is transferable.
Definitely.
You have a program called Social Supremacy Blueprint. This is by far the most complete program I've ever seen that will take a guy from being where he is right now in terms of not running with the social circles he wants to run with to getting that group of friends he's always dreamed of and maybe even outdoing his own expectations. What exactly is included when guys tune into the Social Supremacy Blueprint?
Well, the Social Supremacy Blueprint, like you said, it's going to take guys on a step-by-step process that will enable them to infiltrate high-end social circles and build their own social circles and live the ultimate lifestyle that they've always wanted, whatever that may be. So from the very, very beginning, it will cover everything from how to be socially intelligent so that more people want to be around you, how to understand building rapport so that you can get to a stage where individuals are, you know, they're begging for you to be in their presence. You know, when you go away, they're calling you up for you to hang out with them. It then moves on to understanding social circle dynamics, how to access a social circle and not just access it, how to remain a fixture. Because once you're in the social circle, you still need to be in a stage where you're going to keep getting invited back, where you're going to be a fixture in that social circle. Building social circles, and this is a slightly more advanced concept, but when guys are already in this place and they're established, they may want to build their own high-impact social circle that completely satisfies their desires and their passions. It covers that as well. It then covers your social pyramid, like I mentioned a little bit earlier, but that's really important for being able to put the right people in the right places in your social life so that you have the best positive outcomes. And so everybody's pushing you in the right direction, because nobody wants to be in a stage where they've got, you know, people that are either drawing them down or people that aren't helping their life or helping their life in the current direction. So the social pyramid shows guys how to place every single person in their social life in the best possible way. It also covers social circle seduction, which was a lot of stuff we talked about today. And something a lot of guys don't realize is that seducing the really high quality women, the, you know, the nines and tens in the social circles, is actually easier than the regular girls that they'll meet. It's just simply a process of knowing how and then knowing exactly what to say and what to do at the right times. And we cover that as well in the program.
Completely comprehensive, guys. This program is one of the most valuable I've ever informed you about, because look at the ramifications of getting this right. You will just bring up the level of your entire lifestyle in general by tuning in to what Greg's talking about here. I highly recommend it. It is not the least expensive course you've ever seen. It's not the most expensive, but it is worth about 10 times what Greg's charging for it, at least, in terms of the ROI you're going to get by having taken it. I can guarantee you that personally. The special URL I've set up for you is www.thechickwhisperer.com/Greg. Once again, www.thechickwhisperer.com/Greg. Now, before we close, Greg, it's been my custom for the past several shows to ask 5 hot questions to my guests to help the guys get to know you on a personal level.
Awesome. So, cool.
Here we go. Ready?
Hit me. Let me go with it.
What's on your iPod?
Right now, on my iPod is an album called Radioactive by a rapper called Yellow Wolf.
What's your ride?
Mercedes ML320.
Ah, made in the good old US of A.
Yes, it is.
Made in Alabama. What did you have for dinner tonight? You're in the UK, so you've already had dinner. So what did you have for dinner tonight?
For dinner, I had a mix of meats, hummus, avocado salad. It was like a big mezze, like Arabic mix of everything.
That's so UK.
I love Arabic food. I really love...
I don't think you can even get that in San Antonio. I've had it all over the world. It's great stuff, but I'm just laughing because, yeah, you see restaurants that sell that in London all over the place, but man, there's just nothing like that here. What's the coolest movie you've seen lately?
Lately? Ooh. Coolest movie I've seen lately. Well, I'll be honest with you. I saw Act of Valor the other day, and I really enjoyed that, despite the critics saying it was absolutely terrible. I mean, I thought it was very entertaining.
Yeah, screw the critics, right? Emily and I just got back from India, and we saw this movie called Outsourced.
Okay.
About a guy who has to go train his replacements in India, and the critics universally panned it, and Emily and I thought it was great.
Yeah, I mean, it happened.
You know, it's just a matter, are you entertained or not, you know?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I wasn't expecting it to be an Oscar winner. I mean, but I went in there to watch some action scenes on a, I think it was like a Thursday night, suspend my disbelief and be entertained for a couple hours, and I was. So, I mean, I was happy.
You know, you're talking about Oscar winners. I tried to, on this big long flight we just took back to the States from overseas, I tried to watch that movie that won all the Oscars, the silent movie.
Oh, The Artist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I found it unwatchable. I got through about 10 minutes of it and I didn't get it.
Do you know what? That happens because I thought the same about Hurt Locker. Because of what I do, I got to see Hurt Locker before it came out. I got to see it at the Cannes Film Festival. But I saw it before it won any awards and I was like, I didn't really get it. I thought it was quite boring. But then about a year later, they put it in to Oscars and it won all the Oscars. So, you know, it just happens. You know, it just happens at some movies.
I like The Hurt Locker.
See, there you go. Some people like it.
I think I'm just weird.
You're in the common. A lot of people liked it. I just personally didn't. And I love Jeremy Renner. I think Jeremy Renner is a great actor. I just didn't like that movie.
Yeah, the great thing about The Hurt Locker is it's by a woman.
Mm.
Which only becomes evident at the very end in terms of the storyline and the plot.
Yeah.
Here's the money question. What's the greatest thing about the woman you're currently dating?
I mean, am I allowed to say one thing? I mean, it's like everything about her.
The greatest. It says, you know, the greatest. You wouldn't be the first guy who said I have to list about 40 things and we had to cut them off. But, you know, answer the question as it comes.
The greatest thing about the woman I'm dating currently, she's just got a great heart. Like, she just has a great heart. I mean, you couldn't think of a kinder, more warm-hearted person that just is really, really, just got a really, really big, loving heart.
For the record, gentlemen, that's yet another guy who did not say she's got a nice ass is his answer.
She has got a nice ass.
I'm just saying.
She has a nice ass, too, but she's got a great heart.
Yeah, that kind of goes without saying. Once you get good with women, she has to have a nice ass. That's a gimme.
Mm-hmm.
Gentlemen, his name is Greg Greenway. He's from Social Circle Training in London, England. Get your hands on the Social Supremacy Blueprint by visiting www.thechickwhisperer.com/Greg. Greg, thanks a million for joining us. This has been an excellent conversation.
Thank you so much for having me, man. Every time we talk, you know, it's a pleasure for me. I have a lot of fun. So, yeah, that was good for me. Talk to you guys. I enjoyed it.
Cool. And with that, we're going to sign off from episode number 51 of the Chick Whisperer podcast. Until I talk to you guys again real soon, be good.
The Chick Whisperer podcast is copyright 2009 by X and Y Communications. All rights reserved worldwide. Be sure to sign up for the X and Y Communications newsletter at www.thechickwhisperer.com. This is Ed Roy Odom speaking for the Chick Whisperer Podcast.